This is number 7. One of the experts that we should mention in talking about communication is Dr. Kenneth Gangle. Dr. Gangle, for years, has researched managerial situations, administrative situations, has written many numerous articles and books dealing with leadership. Dr. Gangle has written this regarding communication. Communication is the transmission of ideas between persons in a language that is common to both. Such communication is a basic ingredient of sound leadership and administration. Not only the intended meanings of the words used, but also the meanings which the hearer's experience gives to them are essential to communication. Attention to communication theory can be the basis of greater effectiveness. The goal, of course, of our discussion as we have moved through is to share, illustrate, highlight principles and problems of communication as they are found in almost all phases of leadership responsibility. Certainly, we have noticed that the communication process is a dynamic one, always in operation, never ceasing, when people are in confrontation with each other. The principles that we are discussing affect the relationship not only in organizations, but also in other areas of life. These principles are operative in every classroom situation. These dynamics come into play when a manager in an organization calls a staff meeting to discuss a potential problem or to find solutions for that problem. These are the things that we do all of the time without thinking about them. Like most things that become commonplace, the process of communication can fall into erroneous usage and carelessness. Many of the problems that we face today are a result of breakdown in communication between people. Ely writes, "There is nothing quite so wonderful as a good idea. There is nothing so tragic as a good idea which cannot be communicated." From his vantage point as director of the Audiovisual Center at Syracuse University, Ely has developed a model for understanding communication. The model emphasizes that within the communicative process, there are several interchanges which take place. There are, for example, the fields of experience, and also the source of the message itself, the receiver of the message, and then feedback in relation to the message. All of these interact with one another. Notice that at the very center of Ely's discussion is the message to be communicated. The centrality of the message is in the process of communication. What also ought to be of significance is that the message does not travel the entire route from source to receiver unless the process of communication is operating properly. The model is a general one and can fit one's understanding and perception of almost any aspect of communicative responsibility. Think first of all of the source. Again, Ely, in describing and discussing and even diagramming this development of the communication process, says there is the field of experience, the source, the message, the receiver, the feedback. The source of an idea is person-to-person communication. The source of this idea that's at the heartbeat of this person-to-person communication is in the mind of the communicator. This is where the thought or idea originates and receives its motivation to be transmitted to the thought patterns of another person. In the teaching situation, for example, the source is the mind of the teacher teaching to the students in his class. It should be obvious even to the casual observer that an idea which exists only in the mind of the source is of no value to anyone else. Consider Ely's discussion of the process or the development of the communicative process. We not only would look at the source, but also what would be referred to as encoding. When a message has been decided upon, it must be verbalized or symbolized in some way so it can be communicated to other people. Encoding is not all verbal, as every good communicator knows. In most forms of human communication, it will consist largely of verbalization, but good communication will also include visualization. People who are deaf and dumb, for example, can communicate quite effectively through sign language. No word is spoken, yet ideas are encoded so that they can be transmitted from a source to a receiver. A basic problem in communication is that people do not always say what they mean, nor do they always mean what they say. Sometimes it's even thought impossible by some to verbally encode their ideas. A common statement that well demonstrates the difficulties in encoding sounds something like this. Well, I know what I want to say, but I just can't explain it to you. As long as one persists in that attitude, he is nipping the communicative process in the bud, so to speak. Nothing can be achieved in the transmission of information unless it is first encoded. The young man who is too in love for words had better find some words fast, lest his fair love wander off to another young man who may not have as much love, but knows better how to express it to its object. So again, encoding. When a message has been decided upon, it must be verbalized or symbolized in some way so as to be communicated to other people. Now, at the other end of encoding is decoding. Encoding is futile unless it is accompanied by an adequate process of decoding. When decoding is operative, the message is received and comprehended by the receiver. The decoding is inseparably related to the encoding in terms of reception. A word must be heard. A picture must be seen. The aroma of the sizzling steaks must be smelled. Notice that the sensory experiences of man are extremely important in both the encoding process and the decoding process of communication. Two things I believe are significant here. First, if the originator of the message wishes the receiver to decode properly, he must take pains to encode his message clearly in a form that will be understandable to the receiver. Furthermore, he must be somewhat confident that the receiver has the wherewithal to carry on the decoding process. How foolish, for example, to speak to a young child in Russian if one knows in advance that he understands no other language but English. One could encode most distinctly, and yet since decoding would be an impossibility, no communication has taken place. The Navy flagman standing on the deck of his ship speaks no words verbally to his colleagues on the ship, perhaps some distance away in the convoy. The positions of the flags are encoding by symbolization, and if both individuals have been properly trained, the reception, decoding, and feedback of the message are handled by flag positioning as well. Defective decoding can result from other problems than failures of encoding and the receiver's inability to understand the language of the message. A common flaw is the introduction of a negatively charged emotional element into the communication process. A husband who wishes to speak seriously with his wife about some matter does not begin the conversation by complaining about his supper and condemning his mother-in-law. Conceivably, whatever he might say after such a beginning would possibly be heard, but the understanding grossly perverted by anger, which would distort the decoding. So there's encoding, there's decoding, and there is a receiver. Certainly plain by now that the receiver is the person for whom the message is intended. Desired results may be varied and the situation widely dissimilar. Nevertheless, the principles of communication do not change. The same would be true of a manager or an administrator in leadership role or a leadership responsibility. That manager, that administrator, that leader must go through the same process of encoding and decoding. And then there's feedback. The purpose of feedback is to help the source to interpret whether or not the receiver is understanding and internalizing the message. In short, he needs to find out whether he is getting through. When mom says, "Johnny, didn't you hear me?" she's asking for feedback. When the classroom teacher asks for questions on the lesson, feedback is being solicited. An obvious conclusion relative to the importance of feedback is that the teacher who allows his class to do a good portion of the talking during the lesson time is going to be in a better position to effectively use the minutes which he spends in speaking. Ely reminds us as he continues his discussion on communication, that feedback can be both simple and complex. Ely writes, "The degree of success which a given message has achieved can be determined by feedback. Feedback provides the communicator with information concerning his success in accomplishing his objective. The feedback may be covert or overt. A perceptive question stemming from the message is one of the simplest examples of feedback. The learner who asks a pertinent question indicates his degree of understanding. Most feedback is more complex, particularly in the case of value judgments and attitude changes, which may not be as easy to process. A teacher should attempt to elicit feedback to determine how well he is achieving his purpose. Feedback assists in determining how future communicative messages will be encoded." The desire which one has for feedback is directly related to his philosophy of leadership. The dictator speaks and expects everyone to listen to do what he asks without question. The democratic leader, on the other hand, is sensitive to what people think, and he is concerned whether or not his purpose and the reason for his actions are properly understood by his constituency. But there's also another very important element identified as the field of experience. The communication process does not take place within a vacuum. It's not simply a series of words encoded by a source and then decoded by a receiver. There is a total context or environment in which any message is given and are received. Communication is more than words and ideas. It is a veritable matrix of human relationships. The field of experience may refer to how much the receiver understands. Another way to speak of the field of experience is in terms of the importance or the significance of the communication. Man is both acting upon and being acted upon by his environment. That environment may refer to a room in which he is sitting when a certain message is transmitted to him. It may describe the social and cultural frame of the reference in which he has been brought up. Considerably broad, it is certainly the entire world situation in our own century. Effective communicator takes all of these facts into consideration in structuring the communication process. He realizes that the receiver's mind is a product not only of his internal life, but also of the mass communications that permeates our society today. Someone has pointed out the wide diversity of information that can enter into the communication process as various messages, the messages of communication. In the process, progress takes place from element to element. It's really a cyclical pattern which repeats itself over and over again as the various distortion points in the process are passed. First, I think we need to consider what the source intends to say. The message originates in the mind of the speaker. Assuming he has something of what he wants to convey to other people, he then frames a sequence of words or symbols which will serve as the transportation vehicle for his idea. At this point, the message is known only to him, and it exists only in this form. This is what the source intends to say. But then a second thing we certainly should consider is what the source actually says. Unfortunately, what one intends to say and what one actually says may not actually offer a glimpse at the reality of this problem. Who among us has not had to say on some occasion, "Oh, I didn't mean to say that," or "That didn't come out just the way I wanted it to"? Already in this second stage of communication, the message has been subjected to possible distortion. The mouth is not always an accurate channel for the mind. Third, what the source has said. There's still a third version of the message. The source may not have taken into proper consideration the field of experience of the hearer or the emotional state in which he found himself at the time of the encoding or the differences in the encoding process itself. Unfortunately, unless there's some kind of written record or a third-party witness, the argument must end in capitulation or a draw. Thus, the communicative process exhibits again a vulnerability toward distortion of the message. And then there's a fourth thing. What the receiver wants to hear. The reason for these situations is that every hearer brings to a communicative situation some expectation of what he's going to hear. This expectation is framed by one's own personal desires, the prompting of another, or even the reputation of the speaker himself. Then there's what the receiver hears. It is possible, and even not improbable, that the original message in the mind of the source, in other words, what the speaker says, what the speaker thinks he says, what the receiver wants to hear, may all be different from what the receiver actually hears. It's easy to say that what the speaker says and what the hearer hears must be one and the same, since only one set of words or set of symbols can be involved between the two. But such a conclusion fails to take into consideration the variable factors in the encoding and decoding process. What the receiver hears is colored by what he wants to hear, what he understands about the subject being dealt with, and by the pattern and makeup of his own mind. Sometimes even the basic words themselves fail to get through. How much more distorted is the meaning which those words convey? Words are only vehicles to carry thoughts. It has been said, and certainly it would be well to remind all communicators, that the map is not the territory. In other words, a word or a set of words are to an idea what a road map is to a road, merely a picture, a representation of the reality. The hearing of the word is relatively unimportant when compared to the understanding of the idea which is being conveyed. Now we take a step further. And then what the receiver thinks he hears. The same problem of confusion that we have discussed earlier in terms of what a speaker thinks he says can exist here. A young executive is being scolded, for example, by his superior for having routed a business order in the wrong direction. His response is, but sir, I distinctly understood you to say that. Again, it is important to recognize that the receiver is acting not upon what the speaker thought he said, nor upon what the receiver heard, but rather what he thinks he heard. If all of the six versions of the message mentioned in this discussion can be made identical, then the communication process is in good shape. The feedback element is the built-in control factor which lets the communicator know whether the messages have gone through on the same wavelength. It is essential to keep a constant vigil against distortions of the message if interpersonal relationships are to be carried on smoothly within the framework of the organization. I think perhaps we could offer at this point, again looking at some of the comments by Dr. Gangle, some suggestions for improving communication. First, within the area of administration, avoid verbal instructions. Use written memos and reminders whenever possible. Secondly, use informal settings to facilitate dialogue. Try to break down the barrier that naturally exists between a leader and the people that he is attempting to serve. Thirdly, use careful planning before any group presentation. What possible questions might be raised, and certainly how he will answer those questions. Try to speak to small groups whenever possible. Good audience contact is best assured by limiting the size of the group. Know the audience. Know your subject matter well. Do not attempt to bluff your way through a presentation. Be sincere. Perhaps, and again, sharing some comments from Dr. Gangle, we could look not only at what would happen on the administrative level, but what about in personal relationships? Be friendly, polite, and considerate. Avoid being cold, overbearing, and offensive. Cultivate the practice of listening. This is important not only for feedback, but certainly as a courtesy to the person with whom you're speaking. Use positive words in speaking with people. Avoid offensive terms. Give praise whenever possible. Honest praise, and not simply flowery speech, is needed. Colorful expression and showy words are general devices used by an insecure person to dress up what he feels to be an ineffective presentation. Avoid jargon which may confuse. Do not try to overwhelm the person with technical gobbledygook. In speaking to an individual or in speaking to groups, the effective communicator is careful to see that his words are simple and sincere and that they express in clear, concise manner the thought that he's trying to communicate. Avoid ambiguity. This problem is akin to the one we've just mentioned. The ability to live with ambiguity in thought processes may be a mark of a philosopher, but speaking in these ethereal and cloudy thought patterns is not the mark of a good communicator. Demonstrate clearly your dependence on an expectation of some results from the person. In communication, the receiver should never go away wondering what it was that the speaker really was asking. Listen carefully for feedback. Watch for any indication that the receiver is saying or doing something that will help to understand him better and therefore to communicate more effectively.